Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. I'm John Martin.
And I'm Dean Reverman.
Dean, when was the last time you, well, I'm going to say went anywhere, but you know, when was the last time you went to a concert, a game?
Oh, my.
A movie?
Yeah. With like a lot of people?
Yeah.
Roughly now 14 months or something like that. Wow. I don't know. It's been a long time.
For me, I'm a big baseball guy, so I'm missing baseball.
Yes.
And I hadn't been since Father's Day, I think, of 2019.
No way.
Which was longer than I would like anyway, because I usually like
doesn't
to
that just
to
sound sad?
It does.
It's been that long.
It's been so long. And
yeah.
I mean, maybe I get back there again this summer. I'm hoping to.
Maybe. So. Yeah. All right.
Well,
and not in the cutout form.
Well, yes.
Where it's just like you in a seat.
I'd like to physically
be there. You'd like to physically be there.
With a beer in one hand, a hot dog in the other.
Right?
Screaming Go Reds.
Old school. Yes.
Exactly. So, well, that's kind of our topic today. We're going to dive into the world of hospitality, the technology around what's been happening in the last year, how we've tried to, you know, what's happened with these particular venues, and I also want to touch on the dining side of things too.
Okay,
and then think about a little bit about what's happening in the future. How are we going to pivot? What happens as all these places start trying to reopen and we start trying to get back to some sense of normalcy, knowing that we can't be completely normal still for at least another year, I'd say.
Yep.
You know, so we're gonna dive in a little bit. We've got Shannon Moyes with us from Volante.
We got a good
Systems.
One here today. Yeah,
they're experts in this kind of technology in the hospitality space, in the dining space. We're gonna talk a little bit again about what it means to make that pivot. What does self service start looking like? You know, it was kind of already there.
So
before,
many things were there before, accelerating. Yes, right.
We're gonna talk about F&B dining. What's changed in dining, like in corporate settings, hospitals, education, etc. So
holy moly,
we got a lot.
We got a lot to talk about. We better get at it.
We should probably stop talking and get to it. So, so all that plus our usual value to the VAR and what's tech connecting segments, it's time for us to plug in and get connected.
Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. It's time to get connected.
All right. So as I mentioned, our guest today, Shannon Moyes from Volante Systems. Shannon is a business development manager with the company. Thank you, first of all, so much for being here today. This has actually been a topic I've been wanting to talk about for a little while because I find the hospitality industry fascinating as it is. And I know they've struggled a lot over the past year in so many ways and are desperate to figure out ways to kind of move forward and yet also build on the innovations that they were working with before. Shannon, I'll let you start. Tell us a little bit, first of all, about yourself, your background. How did you get to where you are in Volante? And maybe also, you know, tell us, get into a little bit about how Volante pivoted over the last year. Like, what changed in your world?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm Shannon, as you mentioned, and you so eloquently put it, I'm a business development manager here at Volante. So a little bit about me. I've been with the company for just over 3 years. When I got hired, I was actually a technical writer, so writing manuals and documentation. Then moved into the training team, which was so fun, getting to train all of our customers on our software. And then I moved into the business development manager side. So really exciting blend of all the different stuff. But even before that, in my past life, I guess we can call it, I worked in hospitality as well. So through university and college, I was a server. And it's one of those things. I was using point of sale all the time, but I didn't really think much of it until I started working at a point of sale company. Of one thing, the inconveniences that can be posed by a bad point of sale and how it can enable you to run better when you have a good one. So it's kind of cool that I now get to have both of the point of views from the tech side and then have so much sympathy for the people on the front line serving at the same time. So that's a little bit about me and how I came to be at Volante. And then from a more organizational perspective, I think your segment at the beginning, a lot of people are in the same boat. So lots of us have not been in person at an event in months. And it's hard to know what to expect when you go back. So as a business, what we've done ever since the world kind of stopped, if you want to put it that way, there's a couple things. The hospitality industry was hit so hard by COVID. Restaurants, small, big, large, all sizes, venues, they were all hit really, really hard. So the first thing, obviously, that was a priority for the company would be providing relief for merchants, any sort of relief that you can provide them to to enable them to get through this tough time. It's cliche, but we really are all in this together, and we did all suffer in a different way from what's going on right now. So that was a big priority for us, is to help limit that burden that they really experienced. The second thing would be from a solutions perspective is we've actually been working on, and the industry has been trending towards more contactless solutions for a while now. So you've all seen kiosks in development. You've all seen mobile and web ordering increasing. So that's not really anything new, but it has been amplified by COVID. So whereas before I would have a merchant that might say, oh, I'm thinking about mobile ordering. Now it's I'm getting mobile ordering and I'll think about point of sale later. So that's really where the pivot had to happen in our business, is just making sure that we can take all of these mobile ordering solutions through our third parties and get them into the hands of our merchants. And then tying back to the relief piece of how do we make sure that they can afford to adopt this solution, because they need it to survive. So we did things like waiving setup fees and just trying to provide that relief, because there's no way that a restaurant or hospitality business was going to get through this without mobile or web ordering, for one example. So that's kind of how we pivoted as an organization, and some of the trends that we saw before the pandemic just really are now necessities in the business.
Yeah, I would have, we've talked about it before, that the pivot that had to happen. And it's good to hear that Volante, really flexible company, great company. Actually, they won our 2019 Innovative ISV Award back in Vartech for very good reason. And part of it you're already hearing from Shannon is the ability, the need to work with the merchants and be flexible on what the solution is, what the payment is, how the structure of it looks like. A lot of change had to happen, right, Shannon? You know, just in that world, to help these businesses become still enabled to go out there and do what they do every single day. So yeah, kudos to you guys on doing that, but necessary.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Shannon, I think my favorite thing of what you said, actually it was all amazing, but I love the part where you mentioned how a big part of your job is training customers on using your software. That is something sometimes I feel like we don't talk enough about or think enough about when we think about how we work with customers and how we sell to customers and how we relate to them, is when you're doing that training piece and you're helping teach them how to use products and your products, you learn so much about their day-to-day work and needs. You learn what their pain points are. You learn from the questions they ask about the things that are important to them. Mm-hmm. I think it can make a huge difference. It's a lesson to our VARs, a huge difference in the way you approach these customers. When you think, hey, I talked to this person before, and they told me all this stuff that was their pain points and problems and what they needed my technology to solve. So my next person I meet, I'm going to ask them questions about that too, because there's a good chance they're dealing with the same kind of issues.
Absolutely.
So I have a feeling that probably informs a lot of your ability to go out and go to market and talk to folks about your technology by understanding, like, hey, I've been there. I've helped people get everything set up and started and running. I know what you have to deal with and what you expect out of this technology. So let's talk about what it does for you. Does that sound right?
Well, that's exactly it. And if you think about it this way, if you haven't been a cashier at some point in your life, there is absolutely nothing worse than standing at a point of sale terminal as a cashier with a cafeteria line and something's going on your terminal and people are mad, people are frustrated. It's the worst feeling ever. So being able to train people on how to handle those types of situations, and obviously providing reliable and secure technology is part of it too. But we make it part of our training process for new staff that they actually have to go on site and they have to understand what it's like on the front lines of our technology and of point of sale, because I think there's always going to be a disconnect if you're selling a solution that you've never been on the receiving end of to that certain degree. So it's really important that you understand the feet on the ground, in my opinion. For that
Yeah,
stuff.
I couldn't agree more on that. I mean, you're not allowed to, I don't know, comment on a restaurant unless you've actually worked at a restaurant before. You know,
I
always had that feeling. I worked in a restaurant. I really worked my way through college through the pizzeria. So, you know, I get it. You know, it's totally different when you come out of the restaurant industry. But that's really good insight. And how cool is it that you have your employees go down and learn what it's like, right? If they've never been in hospitality, hey, you got to get in there. You got to see what it's all about in order to understand how the solution fits in and also what their needs are moving forward too. Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
Lends a lot of credibility to you and your business and what you have to offer.
Yeah, that's cool.
Well, so let's start talking about, you know, as we dive into this new year and You know, I know we're all, everyone's itching to get started up again. You know, I'm a big baseball guy, as I mentioned, and I can't wait for the new season to start. Mm-hmm. MLB has agreed they're going to try to do an entire full 162-game season this year. Stadiums are planning, hoping to reopen. I know it's kind of like a city-by-city basis on whether the fans come back in. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I would expect that, you know, as the season progresses, more and more fans will be in the stands. You know, people are getting vaccinated as well. So that expectation's there. Mm-hmm. People are going to start traveling more. You know, I've got some travel plans on my calendar that hopefully will happen this year that couldn't mm-hmm. last year. So as we kind of move forward, are kiosks really like a key to part of this reopening strategy? You know, and I feel like when you went to a lot of these places in the past, you saw kiosks, mm-hmm. but they weren't as prevalent as they should have been. There wasn't as many around. They were maybe just one-offs here and there and, mm-hmm. and still seemed like novel technology. You notice a lot of people wouldn't necessarily mess with them. It would still go directly to a person or a counter or something. So do you think that's going to be a big point of contention when we start doing all this reopening and figure out what our new normal is to get a lot of these businesses back up and running in that capacity again?
So I would say that kiosks not the key, but they are definitely a piece of the puzzle. Like you mentioned, kiosks have been in play for a while now, and some people like them, some people don't. But because of the way that we are going to have to reopen, especially venues, that's a great example, because venues are going to have to think about lots of different areas. So crowd control is a really big one. And you can actually use kiosks to help you with crowd control. So strategically placing kiosks in areas where they're going to be away from groups of people, or kiosks that are properly separated. All of that stuff is now going to be a key to solving the whole stadium issue of how do we safely return fans to the stands. And then they will also help with things like congregation. So when you properly place them, they're going to be spaced appropriately apart. And then you're going to have tools like in-seat ordering, pre-ordering, and that's going to limit that contact as well. So for stadiums in particular, they're going to have they have a lot to think about. From a kiosk perspective, but also from things like sanitization. So you have to clean those kiosks after they get used. So another great example of a technology that we pivoted with is a UV light that on the kiosk, as soon as someone's done using it, it's going to clean that kiosk using the UV light. So all of those things are really important to keep in mind, especially in venue environments, but also in traditional concessions or quick service or any dining venue, really. Kiosk piece of the puzzle, not necessarily the key, but definitely going to have a big, important strategic impact in places going forward.
Yeah. And we've talked about it a little bit as well, kind of generational thing. Look, I got kids that are younger and in college age, and I'm telling you, they like the on-demand. Mm-hmm. You know, they like the ability to go up to a kiosk. They're very comfortable with the technology. And so, you know, as that generation matures and stuff like that, there's just an ongoing need, I think, for some of that automation that comes through self-serve on a kiosk. And even beyond that, and integrating it into, now I'm seeing, you know, how kiosks are being integrated into like holistic things that can serve up your food. Like
right.
I was reading an article on Sally, the salad maker. Did you realize that? So this thing is like a Pepsi machine or something like that, about the size of something.
An on-demand type of.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But you go up and you.
Salad making robot.
Bingo. Salad nice. Making robot is what it is. And you go up and you put in what you want and boop, outputs a salad. But that's all it does.
I like it.
Well, it's so popular, big enough, I guess, that Uber just bought them. So it's like, or no, I'm sorry, DoorDash just bought them. So DoorDash is, and then they're going to offer it to restaurants as a way to augment their ability anyway. So, you know, the whole realm of kiosks, I think, Shannon's got a really good point. It's complicit. It's going to be in the picture. It's not the whole picture, but it's definitely a part of the picture, you know, moving forward.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you mentioned the salad thing because it just occurred to me, like, salad bars. That's right? One of those things that I feel like people are going to be like, ugh, about. Even when we're all, again, getting back to it.
Right.
Like the sneeze guard.
How many
was
people
never
have touched
as,
that spoon? How many
exactly.
people? Yeah.
Yeah. The sneeze guard was like, that was fine. But let's be honest, that was not the only thing that was keeping you safe there. You know, like you're right. A bunch of people touching stuff. Oh, yeah. That's a good point. I never even thought about that one.
Yeah.
Robotic salad maker.
Yeah.
Well, so let's maybe then pivot and talk about a few other different types of industries in hospitality that have been impacted and maybe where you see kind of a path forward for them. I want to save hotels for last because I think that's a bigger conversation that dives into a few other areas too. But let's think about places like amusement. So amusement parks and zoos, for instance, which a lot of which still found ways to kind of remain open. I mean, I did actually manage to go to the zoo last fall, you know, and you know, again, you're most of it's outdoors, but, you know, there's a lot of stuff that was closed that you couldn't do, you know, the usual way. Entertainment, like concert venues, concert halls, theaters. Obviously, the movie industry has really been struggling to figure out where to go from here, or even if they can survive this, especially when you can do almost everything at home still. So, you know, Shannon, from your point of view, maybe grab a couple of those and tell me, like, what are some interesting paths forward that you're seeing in the hospitality realm when it comes to technology, and what can help us kind of get past the current hurdle and maybe move forward in the future to keep innovating and keep moving along?
Yeah, so I would say, generally speaking, the model of ordering food and standing in a line, that is pivoting. So any food service venue, whether it's a cafeteria, a stadium, no matter what it is, that's a different model that's really changing. And part of that is enhancing the touch points that you have to allow for ordering. So kiosks are just a small part of it. Online ordering, pre-ordering, all these different salad making machines, those are just other ways to order your food. And that is really the model, right? Is how can we get more ways for people to order food? Some of them contactless, some of them just really fun and cool to use, but the end goal is the same. And then one of the things too that a lot of people say about these dining areas where they do have, let's say, kiosks, and the challenge is, how do you, I want to start interacting with people again just as much as everybody else does. So how do you still humanize your brand as a food service company with just kiosks? And part of that is taking these humans that you have that would have been a cashier, would have been a server, and you really need to make them your food service ambassadors. So instead of them being the cashier, they're going to be the ones that are guiding people through the technology, or perhaps ensuring things like social distancing is maintained for now. It's a transitioning. It's transitioning the model to, you're still getting to help people. You're still going to be able to have that personal touch to your food service venue, but it's definitely a different style. And I like to call them the food service ambassadors. I think they're the future of any food area that you're going to go to. You're going to notice a lot more of that.
I like that concept because, you know, still the human touch is necessary. I agree with you there. In a fully automated world, of course, we've all seen the articles of restaurants that I think Spice is one of the restaurants that's launched in Boston, completely automated, no humans in it. You just walk in, you're interfacing with kiosks and stuff like that. And I thought to myself, you know, that would be maybe pretty cool to do once or twice, but I don't know. And yes, I get it. I'm old school. I still like the waiter or whatever coming over from time to time. But I like where you're going, Shannon, the food ambassador. Because it's still about the customer experience, right? And restaurateurs absolutely understand that it is about the customer experience. That is a way that they differentiate themselves, and the human element is going to be there. So I think what I'm hearing, Shannon, is just the use of technology, adopting technology into workflows, and then using human skills in different ways, right? Is kind of the way of the future.
Very poetically said, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I like the idea the same way of you can have this digital labor, as they're calling it, this idea of, you know, kiosks and screens and self-ordering and online ordering services that are doing that labor piece for you. But, you know, I think some people hear that sometimes and think like, oh, that's just a way that they can start cutting labor costs. And, you know, I suppose if you are a business that was struggling and had to lay off people and still can't necessarily afford to bring a bunch of full salary people back, that could be something that helps you still get back up to speed. But I think for companies that maybe where that's not the issue, and they're not concerned about needing to cut heads, they don't necessarily have to do that with this. It could mean reallocating these people to other places. Maybe you need more people back of the house so that you can, because, you know, maybe with the self-service technology, more orders are rolling in faster. You don't have to spend as much time getting orders because people can order it on their own as quickly or as slowly as they want. So you have more people behind the house getting orders ready to go, getting everything packaged up, getting stuff out. Maybe you can have more servers, more people doing cleanup. Again, that kind of ambassador type role where maybe it's somebody who's just out there like talking to people as they're coming in. If someone's waiting for a kiosk, you're having a conversation with them and letting them know what the specials are that day, or explaining to them how the kiosk technology is going to work or something. There's no reason why you can't reallocate that labor somewhere else to make your business even more efficient while still having that digital labor up front that's doing, you know, a lot of the work that maybe people might have in the past.
To a certain degree, yes, absolutely. Yeah. Have you heard of Flippy?
Nope.
Flippy the Frybot?
Yes.
You have, Shannon? Right. Yeah. It's like this automated robotic arm that does the fry. So, you know,
that makes sense.
Look, there's still you can make a business case that, you know, robotics or something like that, if there are truly as a need for cost savings on headcount. Okay. And I don't know what the whole economics behind Flippy, the fry bot, if it actually is cost savings. I'm sure it is to some degree. And so, you know, like in a lot of industries, there's going to be this blending of technology.
Right.
You're going to have automation. You're going to have robotics start coming into the space and stuff like that. But again, I'll go over to the customer experience. And Shannon, I think you, Volante, has an eye on the customer experience too, right? Whereas, you know, I think you guys do a really good job of trying to understand and kind of where we were in the beginning, the workflows of the restaurant, the tool sets that people are looking for. I mean, that's where some of the innovation is happening, is on the customer experience side, right? As you tapped into the app, how do I get to my order? Can I get to my order? How do I make that whole process more efficient, right?
Definitely. And it's no secret that, one, when you're placing an order on a self-service piece of technology, traditionally your order sizes are higher because we help our operators build menus that are going to drive that average check size up. And it's going to guide you to items that you might not otherwise have picked. So that's kind of point one of that. And then point two is loyalty. That's becoming a really big piece of any sort of food service operation, is that loyalty component. And it's really interesting, once you start understanding customer buying behavior and getting that data, you can help operators make some really cool, efficient decisions with the data, targeting their customers. And that's all the stuff we like to help with, because it's so cool to watch merchants take that information and give personalized birthday offers. I know that sounds simple, but it's really cool.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I always, you know, this is a little insight into me, maybe you didn't care to know, but I like DSW. Like, that's one of my favorite places to get shoes.
Oh, shoe store. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
DSW has a great type of program, loyalty program like that, where I always get that card in February. I just got it a couple weeks ago for my birthday, that always says like, hey, here's your $5 off for your birthday or something. It's so simple. And honestly, you can go to their app and find discounts any freaking time you want. There's always tons of discounts they're offering up anyway. But that's one of those things that every year almost always makes me go buy a pair of shoes, because I get that coupon and it's like, oh, it's just for me. You know, whatever, you know, they're sending out the millions of people whose birthday this month too. But it does excite me, and I go and buy a pair of shoes.
Hey, loyalty works, you know?
It does.
You know, I think it matters. People like that human connection, or that connection to a brand. I mean, all that stuff matters.
Very much so.
Yeah, to a certain degree.
I also liked the point about the ticket size, which this was something I remember writing an article maybe a year or so back for something, may have been for our blog or something, that was about this idea of increasing ticket sales through whether it's online ordering, through kiosks. And the simple concept behind it was easy to understand, this idea that when someone's not facing somebody who's asking them if they want to supersize or add on a beverage or add on a dessert, there's no guilt involved. You don't care if the machine sees you buying that.
Not only that,
brownie,
but oftentimes the employee, unfortunately, doesn't even do that.
Right.
You know,
right.
And you're unaware of that fact. That's why I think that ticket goes up. Is that where you were going, Shannon? You see, of course, we've seen kiosks have the propensity of having a higher ticket value when they're implemented.
It's both of those, yeah. So half of it is the no shame ordering, I like to call it, where I stand at a kiosk and you would not want to know how many slices of cheese I add to a burger when I'm on a kiosk. Then versus the programming of it all. So if I buy a muffin, it's going to tell me to get a coffee with it. If I get a French fry, it's going to offer something to go with that too. So it has those two prongs, and that really drives up the average check size.
Yeah. And we've talked about one area that restaurants are really grappling with here, where they used to make a lot of their money: drinks and desserts. And, you know, a kiosk does a very good job of offering up that tantalizing dessert. Oh, would you like a cookie with that at the end? Well, why wouldn't I want a cookie? Yes.
Well, and you're starting to see that happen even with the online ordering aspect too. Like, I've noticed when I've bought something, you know, through an app or, you know, on the restaurant's website, you'll frequently get that, hey, you know, would you like to add on this appetizer or this beverage or this dessert? And granted, you know, I know there's been some concern about, hey, people aren't ordering as much of that stuff as they would when they were in store doing it, because maybe they don't want to have it delivered, or it's not as, you know, pressing to them. You know, a beverage, for instance, is probably not something you're going to order you know, for right. delivery.
No, no, no.
You've got
yeah.
stuff at home. Yeah. But at the same time, again, it's still like you have to have that there. If you're not doing that, you are missing out on potential opportunities.
It works. It works on me.
Yeah,
I don't know. We're door dashing yeah. like at least once a week
yep.
at this point
same
in
here,
time.
Yeah.
We did Mod Pizza the other day, which is awesome. You know, and I don't know if you've ever had Mod, but you know, it's pretty straightforward. Of course, they tantalized. Hey, do you want some garlic cheese breadsticks with that? Normally, I would never do it. I'm like, yeah, it's like $8 add-on. I'm like, oh, they better be good.
Yep.
They were actually darn good. But anyway.
See? Well, and that's just it. And now suddenly you're a customer that's going to come back, and the next time you order, think, man, those were really good last time.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to get those again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all part of the game. Here,
they need
you know?
A sophisticated loyalty system that now pings me back and says, hey, how about some garlic bread tonight?
Would anyway. You like a free garlic bread with your next order? Yeah. You're like, yeah. Well, let's make that shift over into one. Let's talk about hotels and in the process of that, maybe start getting into some of the dining stuff too. But in particular in hotels, I think there is a lot of opportunity, even outside of dining, to incorporate technology that does a lot of the work for you to get people back in. I know the last time that I actually did briefly travel for a weekend trip to the lake last May, I think, and you know, stayed at a hotel. And one of my favorite things about it was that I could check into my room and log into my room with my phone.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
First time I've ever actually stayed at a hotel that did that. Usually, you know, at least you're getting the key card of some sort.
Right.
But this was one where I could just go put my phone up there and do a little BLE, I guess, and ping it and it opens up for me. It was an extremely contactless experience. I literally didn't have to talk to anybody on the staff.
Yeah, you just walked in the door, walked up to your room, boom.
And I love that. And there's no reason that shouldn't still be a thing. And, you know, again, I understand that people are going to want that interaction and, you know, there's going to be opportunities for that in the future, but why not offer that kind of technology? So, Shannon, I kind of went from your perspective, you know, what are you seeing as being the future of hotels in order for them to get back to some sense of normal and get enough people back in, and then maybe tie that into how they're approaching the dining aspect of things as well?
I think hotels is a really unique industry from that regard because, like you said, it's going to tie into when people feel comfortable traveling because there's going to also be people that still feel comfortable traveling, but maybe they aren't going to want to stay in a hotel. So it's a weird blend from that regard. I would say from a dining perspective, hotel dining, when I know I stayed in a hotel not too long ago and they didn't allow other drivers to come into the hotel to deliver food. I think from that experience, it wasn't great, I'll be honest, but I get it. It's part of maintaining the safety of letting people come in. I think when it comes to hotels, they're just going to have to, I think they're going to be quite similar than they were before. I don't think there's going to be a huge change in hotels. They have a great system set up already. You can call a hotel 24 hours and get food delivered to your room. What is better than that? And I think that'll remain. I don't think there's going to be that many changes to stuff like that. I think it's just going to come with the industry and it's going to come with the overall sentiment of comfort. That people are going to want to travel again. People are going to feel safe staying in a space that isn't their own. I think that is really the bigger piece as opposed to just speaking about how are people going to order room service.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, there's going to be some technology advances there, but I'm going to use your food ambassador because as I was thinking about it, you know, what do you do with the human capital that's at the hotel? Maybe they turned into, or at least the person behind the counter. And in your world, John, a lot of it's going to be automated and that's just going to happen, right? You go to the bigger chains, everything's on your phone. You just walk up, it's got proximity, boom, doors open. Hey, Dean, you know, welcome, whatever. But the human capital there could turn into like the hotel ambassador. I'm gonna tweak what Shannon said there earlier because I actually think that has a lot of meaning. I do like visiting a hotel and talking with somebody who's local about okay, what should I do? Where should I go? Where should I eat? What's good stuff to do? I mean, so that type of ambassador, a local ambassador, again, it gets to the whole user experience or customer experience. That's how. Maybe I think a smart hotel chain would start leveraging some of that human capital.
You can't exactly ask a kiosk to direct you to the best bar.
Right?
I mean,
you could.
Would just give you a list of bars. But if you want somebody to tell you like, hey, go to, you know, Flo's down the street.
Right.
You know, they make a mean mint julep down there.
Yeah.
You know, and they have some awesome karaoke on Friday nights or something like that.
Right. That's, and then you say, no, I'm looking for a country western. Oh, you're looking for a country.
Right.
Oh, okay. Then you want to go here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
something that human experience still has over a machine, I think, for
yeah.
now. At least until it's all holograms and robots, you know, but they'll just get rid of
that. Like your check-in experience, that is a really good, efficient experience. So I think the businesses that are going to really thrive coming out of all of this are the ones that can blend that with kind of what Dean just said of the ambassador component. When you can put those two things together, you're going to have the happiest customers because they still feel that personal connection, but they also get the convenience of the technology. And that's what's going to, regardless of what segment you're in, I think that's the key. Hotels, food service, that's going to be the key to moving forward is that blend.
Hey, Shannon, definitely. Let's talk back of house real quick, because I was reading some other articles as well about virtual restaurants or ghost kitchens. And I'm really fascinated by that because, you know, I didn't really understand the term very much, but a virtual restaurant, I guess, I've come to understand it's not brick and mortar.
Right.
You're not
it's
actually
just a kitchen.
Well, it's a kitchen, yes, but it's like you're consigning a space. So if you own, if you're a restaurant owner today, you could take on a brand of somebody else. So one of the examples I was reading around is Mr. Beast Burger, right? And so this is like a brand that was launched by some YouTube, whatever,
right.
Huge person.
Right.
And all it is, they did 300 locations in 35 states in one day. They opened them. 300 locations, 35 states, one day. And how they do it? Well, it's other kitchens saying, yes, we've got capacity. We'll take on Mr. Beast Burger,
right.
And we'll make your Mr. Beast Burger here.
And then so hand it off to a driver.
Hand it off to a driver. Yes, pick up or delivery only. And so now you hear stories about restaurant owners that were just down and out, like literally down to their last day that they were going to be open. But they bought onto a virtual restaurant like a Mr. Beast Burger, and now they're hiring again because
that's
they're
awesome.
So busy through that. Hotels, apparently, you know, of course, any hotel that has convention services or whatnot, they've got huge commercial kitchens.
Mm-hmm.
Now utilizing those as ghost kitchens for these types of food services. So I don't know, Shannon. I mean, you know, it seems like we've talked a little bit about how obviously there's a lot of pivoting happening front of house with a consumer experience, but some is also happening back of house, right? Through some of these virtual restaurants and stuff like that.
Yeah, I love the ghost kitchen example because I read an article about how that kind of originated, and it was basically talking about the rent of storefronts for restaurants in New York. And effectively, these merchants could not afford to pay their rent when the pandemic hit. But does that mean that they should stop cooking their mom's recipe of 200 years? People still love that food. They just can't currently stay afloat, right? So I think it's so cool that, like you said, hotels opened up, commercial kitchens opened up, where it's a shared, clean, organized, safe space that they can cook food and still power things out on these apps. And it's interesting because now every time I order food on an app, I'm like, is there a storefront or is this a ghost kitchen? And to me, it doesn't matter. I'm sure it's still going to be tasty, but
yeah,
it's that likely now. And it's really cool and it's great, especially I would say for more of the smaller companies, the mom and pops who really could not afford that rent. Now they can do it in a commercial kitchen. They get enabled to, like you said, come back, hire staff, get that storefront back eventually, hopefully. But it's a really, really neat system, and it's a cool back of house pivot for sure.
Give us a little insight, Shannon, and how Volante deals with that. Because as I'm sitting here thinking to myself, and I don't mean to throw you a curveball here, but you know, I'm thinking there's a lot of pop-ups. I was reading about, okay, there's the DoorDash and the Uber Eats out there, the big ones out there that everybody's well aware of. But there's a lot of innovation happening there too, because as we've all heard, restaurant owners are really upset about how much DoorDash takes and you know, the cut and the percentage. You even have cities and municipalities putting limits on that kind of stuff. And so that's leading to some innovation where people are coming out with competitive products that are much more economical from a restaurant owner's perspective. So Shannon, you know, Volante, here you sit in the middle with this awesome POS system that can do so many things. Do you have to keep an eye on all these delivery services that are happening out there and how you tie into them? Or just talk to us a little bit about that and how you try to stay one step ahead there.
Yeah, this is an excellent question. So I think at the beginning I mentioned one of the things we had to do was get mobile ordering solutions into the hands of our partners. And what that means is the solutions that we typically provide are not going to be something that is integrated to Uber Eats necessarily. It's not Volante plus Uber Eats, right? So we usually deal with a third-party ordering system. And what that actually allows a restaurant to do is have their own web page or custom-branded app. And that way, they can control everything about it. They control the fees, they control the transactions flow. So what that means as well is maybe you only want four orders every 15-minute time interval to come in through that app. They need to be able to control that, which you can also do on things like Uber Eats and DoorDash, but this is without the fees. So you do pay for the website to get built, but that comes back so quickly. Everybody knows margins on food are paper thin. So when you're getting 30, 40% taken off by Uber Eats or DoorDash, it's almost not even worth it to stay open in some regards. So that's where we come in with these mobile ordering solutions that are custom branded. And there are also a lot of other really cool third-party apps that are kind of taking these larger companies by storm and advertising these lower fees. It's all about increasing the touch points with the customers, increasing places they can order. And when you can build them that custom branded web page or app, it's also a really nice personal experience for them. So their whole thing is all their pictures, all their branding, super, they can decide how they want it to flow. So it's a really nice, rewarding thing to be able to provide somebody. And it's pretty cost effective as well. So that's a nice add on.
Perfect answer. Perfect answer, because that's exactly right. What a wonderful way that Volante can help enable the individual store owner restaurant to compete and compete on their terms by helping them build out the application and the website in order to facilitate that. Bingo, Shannon, and good for you guys, because I do think that that's where a lot of this stuff is going to go. It's going to have pressure on the Uber Eats and the DoorDashes of the world to. What a great story to enable a restaurant to be able to compete and still stay afloat. You know,
right,
not
right.
That all their profits are going to. And yes, it has a purpose out there, but it needs to be tweaked a little bit, and they can help out. Now, if you're a reseller and knowing what something like a Volante can do for them when you're walking into those types of scenarios where you know the restaurant owner, and if they're struggling a little bit, well, now you have a product that you can offer up that they can get some of that profit back in things like that. And it's a good thing to do.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I agree. So, you know, I kind of want to go down this dining path a little bit in a different manner. You know, I think we've talked a lot about restaurants, but I used to actually, before I came to Blue Star, worked for a food service equipment distributor. So we worked with a lot of food service management companies that would, you know, manage cafeterias and dining services within education, in corporate spaces, in hospitals. For instance, I had a lot of accounts that worked in the hospital space that I worked with. And I'm sure a lot of them also have struggled big time in the last year. You know, hospitals obviously were still open, but I don't know if they were able to do a full dining services necessarily like they normally would. You know, if corporate offices are closed down, there's not much need to have, you know, the kitchen open and available. Same for colleges and private schools that might have had their own on-hand dining. So I'm curious, from Volante's perspective, you know, have you been working with any of those kind of folks? Like, what's happening in their world, and what are they preparing for next in order to get back up and running?
Yeah, so food service management is actually our core business. So we service a lot of exactly the locations you just talked about. So for them, it was all about, because they stayed open, it was all about the payments. So how do we provide people with safe ways to pay? And part of that was pre-ordering solutions, web, mobile ordering, like we just mentioned. The other part of it was, if they're still coming down to the cafeteria, what options can we give them that limit touch points? So kiosks are part of that, but another really big part of that was PIN pads. So your credit card PIN pads, enabling that Apple Pay, Google Pay, contactless pay, that is huge. So whereas 2 years ago that might have been on the to-do list, now that was a must-have. So we've been rolling out a lot of that, a lot of ways for them to pay with employee badges. That's a huge one. So programs like payroll deduction, that adoption is just skyrocketing, because you don't want to carry cash. You don't want to have to handle someone else's card and swipe it and give it back. Let them tap and go. So that was the biggest thing. For the businesses that did stay open, they really needed to rely on their technology partners to provide contactless payment methods. That was the long and the short of it.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. She said something that you used to refer to a lot last year on the podcast, which is this idea of stuff on the drawing board that right. was nice to have someday if we get there, and suddenly became, no, we need to do this right now.
Right now, yeah.
And this was very clearly one of those things where you suddenly had to realize, like, hey, this is a whole new world. We've talked about getting into contactless payments. We've talked about tap and go. We've talked about, you know, table side ordering, or, you know, being able to somebody to order something through an app and just come pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have to do it because it's, you know, there's a vital reason to do it if we want to stay in business and keep people coming.
And customer service. I am guilty. I am guilty. I have an Apple Watch, you know, now, and I've got my credit card on it. And
here.
It's like the first thing I do when I go up to payment, no matter where I am. I was at a Walgreens the other day, you know, and buying some Valentine's Day cards with my daughter.
Right.
And, you know, tried to do the whole, you know, the thing. And then the customer experience wasn't great because that particular terminal wasn't working. But anyway, it's my go-to now.
Yeah, same here. So I'm the same way, especially when you're wearing a mask because, you know, you can't do a face ID on your phone at the moment. So
Not to mention my credit card's like torn in half. Yeah. And
exactly.
That's through overuse on my kids, but that's a whole another story.
I often wonder, like, what is the look on my face when I try to do that and it doesn't work? Like, is the person behind the counter seeing me going,
no, you know, like, see, there's no stigmatism now. No,
well, I guess not. I'm wearing my mask. They can't tell now.
Yeah.
I'm sneering. I just couldn't do this. Yeah.
Well, no, because I remember Cordy talking about it. Shannon, James Cordy, he's works with us. He's on the marketing side. I remember him talking about how awkward it was use it, you know, in the very beginning, because not a lot of them, to your point, Shannon, not a lot of these terminals had Apple Pay or any of that touchless turned on.
Or maybe it did have it, but the employee actually had
no idea how to use it.
They were like, what are you doing? Like, it says you paid, but you didn't pull your credit card out. Did you hack us? I'm like, no, I just use my watch.
So I don't think there's that stigmatism now. I think there's more and more adoption to that. Isn't that funny? But I mean, that has happened with lightning speed, I guess. And you're agreeing to that, Shannon. I mean, I'm sure you're getting asked, you know, hey, we got to get this stuff turned on, integrated, contactless payments. Way to go, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's everything on the top of everybody's wish list now is, how do we let people pay without making contact?
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's exactly a reason to work with a company like Volante.
Mm-hmm.
So before we move on to our usual recurring segments, I do want to first of all say, hey, if you want to learn more about Volante, first of all, feel free to reach out to your Blue Star account manager. We have a great relationship with them. Mm-hmm. On the Elo team has a great relationship with them.
Absolutely.
In particular. Yep. So if you need some touch screens, you're welcome to reach out, and we'll be happy to connect you with the good folks at Volante to tell you a little bit more about how they can help and answer any questions that you might still have. So, but before we move on, I do want to, as always, thank our sponsors, our TechConnect sponsors, that is Elo, Epson, Honeywell, and Zebra. We could not make this show without you. We appreciate your support as always. Hey, if you are interested in learning more about us or talking to us about some of the topics we discussed, maybe you've got your own ideas about the world of hospitality and dining technology, a couple things you can do. First of all, hit us up on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star rating and review. I know we ask every episode. We're going to keep asking until you start doing it. So,
like in mass. Right.
I know that I see the numbers.
I'm on it right
there
now.
You go.
Hey, all right.
I've seen the numbers. I know most of you get your podcasts from Apple. So you can go on there, hit that 5-star, leave us a nice little review, ask us a question if you want to. We might read some of those.
How else are we going to beat Joe Rogan? People got to get in there. They got
Yeah.
That's our goal. Hey, if you're going to shoot for the top, baby.
You mean Joe Rogan, the guy from just some rando that lives in Texas and has a podcast, you know?
With millions of followers? Yeah, that guy.
No.
Yeah, okay.
No, I'm not talking about that one. I'm talking about some guy that just like has a Beanie Baby podcast or something. We might be able to beat him. He just happens to be named Joe Rogan.
Beanie Baby Podcast. You're comparing us to that?
I guarantee you, if you go look for a Beanie Baby Podcast, it's out there.
That's what's so frightening about it. I guarantee you it is out there.
All right, our producer's yelling at us to keep moving along here. So obviously, you can leave us a review. You can also reach out to us on Twitter. We are at TechConnectPod, or email us, techconnect@bluestarinc.com. All right, as always, let's wrap up with our favorite segments of the week, Value to the VAR. This is where we kind of want to wrap up our conversation with a takeaway for our VARs. And for this one, because Volante is, you know, a company we feel like you should be working with, and they have we call them the most innovative ISV for a reason at our VARTech show. We love working with them for a reason. So, Shannon, this is your chance to kind of tell our audience, you know, First of all, how does Volante work in the channel? Like, how do you approach the reseller channel, and what does your business model look like? What's your pitch to VARs about how you work in the channel and can work with them?
Yeah, so I would say we have a traditional reseller model, but a non-traditional approach. So traditional reseller model is going to cover how you actually get the software and how the program works. But the non-traditional approach is what I think is more important to focus on. So we're actually quite picky with the resellers that we select. We want to make sure that it's a good match for the both of us. It benefits neither of us for it to be a bad fit. So we really focus on selecting strong partners that align from a core values perspective and from the goals that we want to achieve together. So after that, we focus on things like product knowledge. It's obviously a really big component to ensure that the reseller is well trained. We help you with RFPs. We'll help you with all the pricing. We provide a lot of support. It's a partnership. It's not just a one-way transaction. It's a full reseller partnership. And I would say that's what's a little bit non-traditional about the way we approach it, is the level of support that we really do provide.
Oh, and I would agree with that. And that's so important. We've talked about this time and time. As a reseller, you need to make sure that you're picking the right partners. Mm-hmm. If you're on the fence, or maybe the partner you're with right now is not the best, I'm telling you, Volante is good. They understand the channel. They understand resellers, how to support them in a way that is very, very unique and so very critical in this time. And, you know, when you're a reseller, sometimes you can feel like you're out on an island. You need great partners like Volante to help.
Yeah, I don't know how you could have listened to this entire podcast and reached this point and not think that Volante is a partner for you.
There you go, right? Yeah.
I mean, everything that Shannon's been saying, clearly they understand this industry. They understand this technology. They understand what your customers need in order to get themselves back up and running. So,
yeah. And even though she's in Canada, and you can tell by the accent, right? Your accent gives you away, Shannon.
Does it?
Yeah. About.
Oh.
About.
Just kidding with you.
We didn't have to do that. Like, our Kentucky accents probably
are
given
totally,
away.
Oh, totally, totally. But we love Canadians. We've always said that here. Yeah,
we do.
We have a propensity. Thanks. We have a propensity to have a lot of Canadians on this program.
That's
right?
A good point. We do, because Canada's awesome.
Terry Miller. We've had a ton of them.
We have. Yeah, indeed. Anyway. All right. Well, let's wrap up with our favorite segment of this week and every week. What's Tech Connecting with You? This is where we take a moment to talk about some of the cool, fun technology, innovations, science, whatever cool things we've been playing with, reading about, using, just whatever's got our attention. So, Shannon, I'll let you start. What is Tech Connecting with you right now?
Well, you're really putting me on the spot there. Well, Tech Connecting, I would say that Dean has beat me because he has an Apple Watch and I don't. That is on my list of things to do. But I think it's really, I was looking at my phone last night in particular, and I'm really interested in all the health analytics that are now built into things like the watch and the phone. So I was looking at, it was tracking my sleeping hours. It's tracking all the different times I stood up and sat down. The level of health tracking on these devices is so cool. And that's really what's going with me right now, is just, I'm so intrigued by the data that's in here, just by me not even putting anything in it. So just based on me walking around with it or picking it up and putting it down. That's really what's interesting me right now.
Oh, Shannon, you need the wearable. If you get the Apple Watch, it takes it to a whole new level. Squirrel away money, you got to get one.
Because the only thing I will warn you about is you do become a bit of a slave to closing your rings. At least I am.
I'm a little militant. But see, that's
that.
Good. That's good
it
for
is,
you.
It is.
This is not a bad thing.
But it's honestly something where, like, I feel a little bad if I have a night where I'm just like, no, I just don't feel like working out tonight, and I don't close that ring. And the next day, my watch is like, you did this yesterday, but you didn't close your other two rings. Try to do more today. And
right.
I'm like, all right, fine, watch. I understand.
And these aren't donut rings that you're closing, by the way.
No, not so much. If they were, I'd be like triple closing it every day. But no, this is your exercise, your movement, and your stand. The number of times that you've been standing during the day.
Oh, Shannon, because I'm into it. I'm geeky. I'm not overly geeky, and that I don't have a blood pressure monitor hooked up to it and all that good stuff. But I do have it track my sleep and all my movement and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool. It is. It's fascinating what this little thing can do.
If you're an Apple person, I think it is worth the investment. It's one of those things that I wasn't sure that I was going to love,
and I
can't live without it. I very much enjoy it.
Well, it's off my wrist for like an hour, and I'm like, is it charged yet? Is it charged yet? You know, I'm losing data.
See, that's why I charge mine at night, but I guess I don't get the sleep stuff there. My bed does that for me, I guess.
Yeah.
All right, well, what's Tech Connecting with you?
Okay, well, Lego cars.
Okay.
So not Lego, the brand.
Tech, but
not Lego, the brand, but think of it conceptually. All right, so there's this company out there called something electronics, I forget, but they're coming out with a product called eBussy. E-B-U-S-S-Y. Okay. And what this is an electronic vehicle. I guess, Shannon, I've been into electronic vehicles for whatever reason. I don't own one, but I'm really intrigued by the Teslas of the world. And apparently there are a lot of EV companies just ready to pop. A lot of them are going to start coming out. Well, anyway, one of them is called eBussy, E-B-U-S-S-Y. It's out of Germany. It's not in the States. But basically, the concept is this. You got the base. And then on top of that, like Legos, you can build out whatever kind of car you want. So think Very of it cool. as like a, you know, it's interesting. It's just an interesting concept. So I'll just rattle off some of the things that you can get if you were to go there and shop for them. But so you start out with the base model again, and then you could convert it into a pickup truck. You could have it as a, they call it the kipper, which is a little like a flatbed, like a, more than like just a pickup truck, more of like a flatbed. You could make it into a camper. You could make it into a box truck. You can make it into, have an open back for, so you could put your surfboards and stuff like that in. So anyway, the whole idea is that what I meant by a Lego car is that you can like put in the pieces you want. Really economical. These things are like $25,000. Or something like that.
I have to think that customization for cars is going to become a thing in the future.
100%.
Anyway.
100%.
Like my wife's been doing a little bit of car shopping, and she always encounters, I think, which we always encounter, I think, when you go looking for cars, where you know what you want, and it's so hard to find what you want somewhere that you can get it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know I want this feature, this feature, this feature, and this one dealer over here has it, but it's not in the right color.
Mm-hmm.
Or this one over here is the right color, but it's missing this feature that I want.
Mm-hmm.
That customization, I know there are companies that are kind of doing that, but it's very high end right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I still feel like that's the future of buying vehicles, is maybe a combination of being able to customize your features as well as, like, literally sounds like customize what your vehicle is even going to look like.
Oh, absolutely.
That's
yeah.
pretty cool.
So anyway, so you get the Lego blocks and you can build out whatever kind of car you right. want through this. I'm telling you, I think the automotive industry is going to look a lot different in 5 years. Give it 5 years. Totally different than what it looks like today.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know if I'm buying a kipper yet. I might go with that.
Well, if so, I might need your help moving.
What's that?
I could see my little nephew on that Lego building website add to cart, and then some $25,000 Lego truck shows up. Not good.
Not good.
So it's looking at Bill. What is this charge? What did you do?
Yeah. Oh, here's a little tip for those of you that have kids or having kids that can get to age. I'm going to sidebar here real quick. So we've got an Amazon account, right? My middle daughter, who's 18, has now figured out that if she just drops something in the cart, maybe the parents will buy it at one point in time when we go to do our next order, or maybe we won't realize it's in there. Shannon, you're touching
That's
on something
brilliant.
There. Isn't it brilliant? So she'll drop in like little nail stuff, or
it's
like a $5 thing. And so it's not a big thing, but so I'll be buying something. Hey, what the heck is this?
Right.
Well, the other day she dropped in an inflatable hot tub. For like $500, and she's like, "Did you see what I put in the cart, Dad?" And I'm like, "Well, no, we're not buying a $500." She's like, "Oh, I was so close." Anyway, you just reminded me of that, Shannon.
Kids will just try to sneak anything past
right?
you they can.
Yeah,
they?
Exactly. So anyway,
thanks for my preview of the future there.
Yes, exactly. So what's Tech Connecting with you, Jeff?
So if you recall last year, you brought up in one of your Tech Connectings about the government starting to release and talk about UFOs.
Yes.
And some basically acknowledgement that there was unidentified encounters that they've had with
non-Earth,
some objects.
Non-Earth whatever.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Well, about a month back, after multiple like Freedom of Information Act requests, mm-hmm. a website called the Black Vault, maybe that's not the name of the website, but I think it's the documents at least. Yeah, it is the website, had reached out so often to the CIA. And finally, since the CIA had agreed to reach this point of like, yeah, we're unclassifying this stuff, we don't care, they literally one day just dumped on them their entire collection of UFO-related documents, or at least what they were willing to share. They're not sure if it's all of it, but it was a lot.
Yeah.
So apparently you can go out to this site and you can sift and sort through tens of thousands of pages of documents.
Oh, like related. Testimonies of people
exactly.
said, hey, I saw a light in the sky. And
exactly. And I've not dove into this yet. I me from high school would have like spent like 20 hours just digging through this probably.
You wouldn't have slept for like 3 days.
I was
days.
In love with all things UFO and aliens. Like I read all the books. I loved this stuff. You know, back when the X-Files was on and everything.
Right,
but,
right.
But I can't imagine like how dense that must be. And yet at the same time, I also can't think there's anything too earth shattering in there for them to just willfully release. Like, you know, if there was something that clearly said like, you know, Zorp from planet Narg
right.
came here
and introduced himself
and gave us our smartphone technology, you know, like I think we would have heard about that by now. It would have kind of changed the entire universe as we know.
All right.
All so
you're
sudden,
popping so. The bubble. Yeah. Right. Yeah, so maybe there's some stuff happening up there. It's hard to explain
I'm
what
sure
it is.
I'm sure if you're a ufologist and you're somebody that loves this stuff and loves to dive into, you know, these conspiracies and these theories and, you know, what's going on, there's probably some great technology. It looks like it's 2,700 pages of UFO related documents declassified by the CIA since the 1980s. Unidentified aerial phenomena, UAP, as they refer to them.
So, there you go.
But yeah, a quarter century Freedom of Information Act requests is what they worked on in order to get all of this kind of information. So,
that's a lot of work.
Yeah. So if you're interested, go check out the Black Vault. I think this was an article on space.com. I'll put a link in the show
notes. I guess we need people combing through all this information.
Probably. I'm going to assume by now, it's been maybe like a couple months, I think, since this stuff went
so
out.
So it's been combed?
I promise you. There is somebody who did the 20-hour read and like
exactly
and,
okay
and,
they're on
yeah. And I'm sure there's like Reddit sites up and all kinds of sites explaining everything so how we're you know we're
it was
all
probably my dad he's retired and loves UFOs
there
so
you
I'll
go
ask him for his notes and I'll pass them to you.
Awesome. Yeah, give me the Cliff's Notes version. I don't want to have to go through all myself anymore. I don't have time for that, but yeah, give me the Cliff's Notes. All right, well, Shannon, thank you so much for joining us today. We very much appreciated having you on the show.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you guys for all the support. Really appreciate it. And it's been a pleasure having you guys for this chat. So thank you.
No problem.
Thank you.
And hopefully we can all get together at a venue someday soon and have a beer and hang out. And
Well, they better be at VarTech this year. We're going to do that.
Exactly.
I'm itching for VarTech. Yeah.
There you go.
There you go.
All right. Awesome.
See you there.
All right. Well, until then, so and until next time, everybody, please stay connected. Built with versatility in mind, Elo Edge Connect offers a wide assortment of peripheral options for your digital display. Whether for endless aisle, self-order, or collaboration, you can seamlessly attach up to 4 peripherals to the touchscreen edge with flexibility to add, remove, or change later as needed. Options include barcode scanners, EMV cradle, customer-facing display, webcam, and more. To learn more, visit Elo's microsite on BlueStarInc.com or contact your BlueStar account manager. Zebra is reinventing companion scanners with its new CS60 series, the ultra-versatile scanner with a first-of-its-kind design to adapt to any workflow. Easily convert between quartered and cordless operation, handheld and hands-free, as business needs change. Regardless of what's purchased up front, users can change models at any time for superior investment protection. Easy to charge, pair, and configure, the CS60 series is ready for mobile scanning, checkout counters, kiosks, and more. It's also available in a purpose-built healthcare model. To learn more and find plenty of helpful sales tools, check out the show notes or contact the Blue Star Zebra team.